Steve. Hi, guys. It's Bill and it's Wendy. In a world filled with... I can't get that deep.
In a world.
That's deep. I can't do that. In a world filled with sad news and bad news, you and I are both happy about the same thing, and that's that new Bozo footage has been archived and out, and we can watch episodes from the 60s that we never thought we'd see again.
Although it just makes me realize how much my mom didn't love me.
Well, why do you say that?
Because I didn't go to Bozo.
Oh. Well, if you use that as a barometer, then
you
yes,
went twice. That's how much your mom loved you.
Well, it was through friends of ours. It wasn't through my mom.
So your mom didn't love you either?
My friend's mom loved me, as it turned out. So somebody loved me, and it was her. No, on two different occasions, we were fortunate enough to bypass the 7-year wait, and family friends ordered extra tickets, and we got to accompany them. If you don't know what I'm referring to, Dean Richards announced on Steve's show just a little while ago that there's going to be another special in a couple of weeks on Channel 9, that Bozo, Gar, and Ray, every time it's on, honestly, I can't stop watching it.
That and The Godfather.
Those are the two things, right?
I know
you
are.
If they ever combine those,
yes.
if Bozo and Cookie ever did a version of Mario Puzo's The Godfather, I'd be in heaven.
I don't even want to think of how funny that would be.
The Clown Father. That would be so great. Please, please make that happen. But in a couple of weeks, we'll be able to see footage that has been remastered and will look fresh, and we can watch the magic that was Bozo Circus. And what's better than that?
These are original Bozo Circus, and it's not... I heard Dean say it's not new footage, it's what aired, but they have perfected it.
Right.
And all the lovely people and lucky people that got to go can actually watch themselves.
Right.
They might see themselves.
It's like the Peter Jackson World War I movie.
Yes.
I heard that was so great.
Similar.
Distorted and...
Similar.
Turns out Bozo's nose is red.
Was Peter Jackson involved in this, Steve? Do we know?
I don't know
the
if he was involved
of the
in this
Bozo
Bill Jackson? Was he involved?
He might have been.
Keith Jackson.
I don't know who that is.
Sports announcer. The episodes that I was there for, the two that I was fortunate enough to sit in on, were in the 70s, so they will not be part of this. This is the Bozo of the 60s.
Please tell me you didn't.
Which I think is the red-suited Bozo, I think.
Yes, the picture has him in the red suit, and then it switched to Cubby Blue.
Yeah.
Because he's a Cubs fan.
Yeah.
Were you lucky enough to...
You didn't hear Joe Ricketts' joke line. That's why he was a Cubs fan.
Phil, I love you. Were you lucky enough to play the grand prize game?
No.
Thank God.
That would have been the best. That would have been the absolute best. The first time I went, you already know this, I had 104 fever.
You get tickets, you don't pass it up.
That my mom called our family doctor and said, you tell me what to do. He's burning up. He has 104 fever, but we have Bozo tickets. And the doctor said, why are you even calling me? You got to go to Bozo Circus. It's a 7-year wait. But everybody in Chicago knew that.
And how many kids got sick because of you?
I think everybody in the cast of thousands, I think all thousands. Which, by the way...
Don't ruin it for people.
The bubble.
Stop it.
Here we go.
They said at the beginning of every episode of Bozo Circus, and a cast of thousands. And if you were a kid watching at home, you saw the crowd and you go, well, there's thousands there in the cast. Ringmaster Ned's not going to lie to me. I'm a kid.
Don't pull back the curtain.
When you went there.
Well, some of us didn't go there.
There's only about 200 people in the cast of thousands.
I started at WGN as an intern in 1984.
Yes.
And they were still, of course, making the show then.
Yes.
And the radio station was up at Bradley Place. And that was one of my first coolest memories, is walking down the hallway and seeing the big Bozo drums, spinning the drum. And, you know, just was sitting there in the hallway all the time.
It made your heart beat very fast to see that stuff.
Yeah.
When you're waiting in line to go into Bozo Circus, those of us who were lucky enough, the drum with all the, you know, you'd send a letter saying,
postcard,
I want to be,
yeah.
So that drum was there.
Oh, that's so
cool.
And
that was the thing you never realized. That must have had 10,000 letters inside of it. So the chance of them picking yours out to be part of the play at home version of the grand prize game, it was impossible.
I wonder if my mom ever sent my name in.
I wonder how often they change the names out.
Oh, good question.
And here's someone who applied in 1964.
Good question.
Eric wants to talk Bozo with us. Good morning, Eric. How are you?
Bill, Wendy, good morning. I wanted to chime in on your Bozo comments.
Sure.
My mom just passed away, and I'm not saying that to bring the show down at all, but one of the fondest childhood memories I have is my mom bringing me to the Bozo show. I got to play a game on TV, and I remember sitting next to the trombone player. I was literally one seat away from the trombone player, and he was cleaning the trombone, and he squirted trombone cleaning fluid on my lap and then my face and everything, but it was such a great time, and it was just a lot of fun.
Can I tell you, though, those are the things you remember. We talked to John Duffy, our show psychologist. When things go swimmingly, you just go, oh, yeah, that was a great time, but when something goes awry, that keeps in your memory box a little bit more. So kudos
to you. Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah, my mom went along. Was my mom, my older sister, and myself. I'm 56 years old, and I think I was about eight or nine years old when we went. And I got to guard a door. One of the interns on the Bozo show said, "Don't let anybody go in this door, and I'll give you a prize afterwards." I said, "Okay."
Wow.
So,
what'd you get? A giant Tootsie Roll?
And pardon me?
What'd you get? A giant Tootsie Roll?
No, I got to play a game on TV.
Oh,
it was,
cool.
It wasn't the grand prize game. It was one of those alternate games where they had a bunch of marbles and a stack of hay, and you had to collect as many marbles as you could, put them in a bucket, and you won a prize.
Eric, were you then a celebrity for the rest of your scholastic career because you were on Bozo Circus? Did the kids in your town just treat you as a celebrity?
Not exactly.
No? That's not fair.
The game was supposed to be a needle in a haystack.
Considering the circumstances, it's a very fond and happy memory.
Well, thank you. Glad you shared with us, and sorry about your mom. We have more people who want to talk about their parents loving them.
Sure. It doesn't mean your mom didn't love you. She just
didn't love you that much.
She didn't love you as much as other moms love their kids. So don't feel bad about that. I'll tell you, the thing that throws you the most when you show up when you were there, Wendy, you'll never know this thrill, but for the rest of us whose mom has loved us, when you go there, you don't think about this when you're watching Bozo Circus on TV, but the people who are in Bozo Circus are never facing you, the audience, when you're
really?
There. They're because think about where the camera is. It's the camera, and then on them, and then the cast of thousands, wink, wink, is behind them. So when you go to watch a taping of it, you see the back of Oliver O'Oliver and Cookie and Ringmaster.
It's the best side.
Well, for some.
But like when they were spinning the plates, that was down at the end of the bleachers, though, right?
Yeah. They spun the plates in the center ring, and so you got to see. Yeah, it seemed like every episode. Somebody was spinning plates to that song. That song, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Wow.
Right.
Oh, God, that's I have goosebumps.
That's where you get instrument cleaning solution on you right there.
Right.
630 Bill says,
blow,
come
baby,
on.
Blow.
630 to you, Bill. Come on. The cast of thousands included people watching at home like me.
Without a doubt. Well, then it was hundreds of thousands. But when you're there, when you see it on TV and they say cast of thousands, you say to yourself, wow, there's thousands of people there watching it. And then you show up and it's like,
really, you got to show up and you still complain?
I wasn't complaining. I just, And my mom, who loved me a lot, Wendy, even said, this isn't a lot of people.
Did 9-year-old Bill point that out to anyone at the set?
Yes.
Did you?
I was pointing that out to people sitting near me.
Excuse me.
No, he passed out. He was sick.
104 fever.
How do you even remember when you were
fever.
So sick?
Fever.
That's not fair.
Yeah.
You were sick and you got to go.
Well, yeah. Yeah. All right. A break and then more of this. Want to join in? 312-981-7200 gets it done. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Introducing Bozo! The world's most famous clown!
Bozo the Clown, Bozo T. Clown, has been reworked and remastered, and WGN TV is going to be airing it February something, I heard Dean say.
February 17th. It's a Sunday night. 7 p.m. start. The puck drops at 7 p.m.
The
original
nose drops.
Original six, Wendy. So that's the 7 p.m. start on Sunday, September 17th. It said the special will include Bob Bell as Bozo. That's your original recipe, Bozo. Joey Diaria came later. Ray Rayner, who played?
He was...
First name and last name were the same. Does that help at all?
He wasn't Sandy.
No. Oliver.
Oh, he was Oliver O'Oliver?
Yeah. Yep. Don Sandberg was Sandy.
Oh, okay.
Because of his name, Sandberg. Ned Locke, of course, Ringmaster Ned. And the band leader, who was?
Can't remember.
Oh, Bob Trendler. and the Big Top Band.
That sounds like a fake made up SNL.
No, that's his real name.
And there were only like there were four of them, right?
Yeah.
You forgot Wizzo. Although he
Wizzo
came later.
Was later.
Marshall Brodeen.
Yeah.
God, I loved my TV magic cards, didn't you?
Hey, Marshall Brodeen, you're a TV magician.
Yes, you're TV magic man.
Tap
yes.
the deck. They all changed to your card.
It worked. Oh, yeah. My God.
It's a miracle.
All you did was just put every other card was like whatever their, yeah. like say two of clubs. There were 52 of clubs. So you would just alternate everything. Yep. And when the pattern was broken, I just gave everything away.
Magicians never tell their secrets.
I'm like Penn Jillette. Hey, Glenn has been on hold for a while and wants to talk Bozo. This is great news. Bozo's coming back, Glenn.
It sure is. Hey, Wendy, I thought I'd throw the gauntlet down so you feel bad about your mom not loving you. My mom got me on to Bozo Circus and Romper Room, and I had the opportunity to actually meet Ray Rayner right before he started his show.
Glenn's mom loves him, Wendy.
Well, I hate Glenn.
Oh, that's horrible to say.
Oh, you lucky dog. Cuddly Dudley.
Yeah, it was really kind of neat to be able to have all that happen. I can even remember being able to be one of the kids that held the flag for the Romper Room. And my mom was so excited about it. She got me published in that little, the local newspaper, you know, down in Harvey, Illinois, you know, that I was on the Romper Room show. I still have that cutting.
That's excellent. So was that the Miss Elizabeth Romper Room or the Miss Francis Romper Room?
Oh, definitely Miss Elizabeth.
Miss Elizabeth.
Where
her bouffant hair was almost as tall as I was.
So she looked through that handheld mirror that didn't have any glass in it. Yeah. She'd say, I see Joey.
Bumper stomper, bumper boo, tell me, tell me magic mirror, tell me today, did all my friends have fun at play? And then she'd mention every child in America, except for Wendy.
Are you an adult or what? But Wendy was not a very common name back then, so I didn't even get a shout out there.
Oh,
my mom.
Oh, I feel bad for you, Wendy. I really do.
Yeah, that's why you rubbed it in so hard. Thank you, Glenn.
Sure enough. Bye-bye.
Have a great one. Can we talk to Stuart?
Yes.
Because this is pretty exciting. Yeah. Hi, Stuart.
What's up?
Good morning. How are you? What this guy, last guy was just saying, I actually on Romper Room, she said, and I see Stuart, which is an unusual name.
How did you get mentioned?
Because I sent something in, like a contest for making a stuffed animal for a children's hospital. But anyway, back in 1966, when I was in first grade, one of my classmates, she was going to Bozo Circus, so a lot of us that used to just bring lunch to school went home at lunchtime to see if we could spot her in the Wink Wink Cast of Thousands.
Yes.
And she actually got picked by the Magic Arrows for the grand prize game.
No greater honor to a child in America than that.
She got bucket number one, and I think she won like some bun candy bars Hanes pantyhose for her mother.
That's
crazy. Then she hit it off the rim on bucket number two. And as we
is
got
she
older,
Cody Parkey's
in like
daughter?
Middle, in like, what's that?
Is she Cody Parkey's daughter?
yeah, she boinked it. So as we got older into like junior high and high school, the joke around school was, well, don't go out with her, you'll never get to second base.
Oh, goodbye.
I mean, we were cruel as kids.
That's terrible. So. That's funny, though. No, she was like a six-year-old girl.
That's not funny at all.
But no, we followed her all through, you know. It's like, she missed bucket number two, you know.
Wow.
Oh, God. Stuart, thanks for making us laugh.
All right, I'm more than happy to. And thanks for making me laugh.
Appreciate it. Imagine having a reputation at six through no fault of your own. You did, yeah.
All right, Nancy.
Yep.
What's up?
Hey, Dylan, Wendy. Great to talk to you. I actually got to go to Bozo Circus when I was a freshman in high school because my mom had sent away for tickets when I was four. And my sister actually made it on to Bozo Bucket and made it to bucket number four. She got a Laverne and Shirley game.
Oh, wow. Bill's jealous.
That's very jealous.
I know. And my mom and my friend and one of her friends went with us. And do you remember Rod Taylor was like a real hottie news anchor?
Jack Taylor.
Googling him. Oh, my God. It was the most embarrassing thing ever.
That's Jack Taylor. Rod Taylor was in the Time Machine.
Oh, God, you're right. Yeah. It was Jack Taylor.
Both
Sorry, Bill.
Both handsome,
right.
Both handsome gentlemen, though.
Jack is still doing it, I think, isn't he?
Is he still around? Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's
good.
Doing a cable thing or something.
Oh, good news. Good news.
Oh, well, wow. Okay.
Nancy, thanks for that.
Thank you.
Take care. Have a great week. All right, you too.
Am I the only one who never went? Bertrand, did you go?
No, I didn't. But I was on the set all the time.
Steve, you told me a story about how Wendy's mom had offered you tickets at some point.
Shut up, Bill.
She had ordered
right.
tickets. That's weird.
She was punishing Wendy?
Right.
What? I was always punished. I really was.
But for the good. I mean, it was
well, it
own,
helped me out in
yeah,
the long
it helped
run.
You overall.
I had a
sure.
lot of imaginary friends. I learned to talk very much by myself.
Okay, so I just searched a picture of Jack Taylor, so I'm gone for the day now because I'm just... looking around at 1960s pictures of Tom Skilling and Marty McNeely.
Oh.
Marty McNeely.
One of my first jobs was to write for Marty McNeely.
So, all right, Steve, help me with this really quick. I know we have to break. The story I've always heard, anyway, about Creature Features is that beginning opening was sometimes Jack Taylor and sometimes Marty McNeely, that one of them started doing it, and then Carl Grayson took over at some point. Is that true? Do you know if that was true?
That was before me. I worked with Marty when he was doing radio, like Saturday nights he was anchoring, and I was his writer.
Bill's just showing off his
lack of anything.
No, the things you remember.
Important.
Bertrand's trying to flex his muscle to say, I wrote for Marty McNeely.
No,
I wrote
no,
for everybody.
No.
Yeah, and your parents loved you, too.
That was back when we had writers, more writers around.
I totally remember Jack Taylor. I didn't until I looked him up.
Yeah.
Wow.
He was great. He was good. All right, we must
Night
take
beat.
A break. He was the host of Night, which Carl Grayson also hosted
okay,
for a while.
Could you go home?
My mom and I used to watch that together, and she would tell me
you
how much she loved me.
You did things together?
She told me how much she loved me.
Remember
yeah.
they do the 15-minute newscast at 1 o'clock
yes.
before the games?
With no, it was just a graphic of the city. It was a skyline shot of the city. There was no, you couldn't actually see the reporter or the stories.
Just
it
audio?
It was just a background, yeah, with a background of the city.
Did you watch that with your mom,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, okay. She loved me. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get you some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Would it worry you if I told you that I hear this music everywhere I go? Would that scare you
no,
at all?
It would really be part
yeah.
of the course.
Isn't that crazy? Everywhere I go, this is playing.
This is the Bill Left theme. Save this, will you, Jasmine?
I think if Maroon 5 had opened with this, the results would have been a little bit different on Sunday.
We were talking about Bozo the Clown. Someone says, Wendy, I wasn't on Bozo either. Let's have a Bozo Bucket drinking game party while watching the special, which is February 17th. Will WGN support this?
Absolutely.
You think so?
100%. Yep.
And then there's a weird one can I share with you really quickly. And by the way, 312-981-7200, we have a Sweet Alley's Valentine's Day treat box to give away, and you have a Bozo question, so let's fill the lines. 312-981-7200.
Call right now. I will not ask the question until the lines are full.
And then we'll just randomly take a particular number caller.
Yeah.
And this is smart because people can't
no way to Google this.
Cheat.
Right.
My daughter puked all night before, but we still went to the Bozo show. Her grandma had tickets reserved before her and her cousins were born. So you went to Bozo with 104 fever.
104 fever.
This girl had the stomach flu.
Yeah. It was kind of commonly believed back then that no matter what was wrong with you, if you had the Bozo tickets, you had to honor them. Steve?
It was like the 60s and 70s. Version of going on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
Sick
very much
kids
so.
Everywhere.
Yep. It's almost the same. You're right.
Bill and Wendy, I went to
funnier
Bozo.
In my head.
I like your head. Bill and Wendy, I went to Bozo twice. I got picked for the grand prize game, and the second time I went with my brother, he got picked.
Oh, God. That's pretty lucky.
And there was somebody, I can't find it, but.
Don't you wonder if they had a really cute mom?
Well, yes.
Did that sound better in your head, too?
Well, I'm just, you know, was it really random?
Here's what we were told while waiting in line, that if you dressed your kids in flashier colors, they tended to pick you. I don't know if it's true or not, but I did notice that particular day, every child that was picked was wearing a bright purple or pink or blue, something that jumped a little bit. No earth tones. So here's a tip for anybody.
No
hoping.
Hush puppies forbidden.
Right. No hush puppies ever.
All right. This is from 630. I was able to go to Bozo twice, played the grand prize game, and Bozo kissed my mom during one of the spoofs they did.
See?
That's what he said anyway. It's okay. You can kiss me. We're doing a spoof. then come here. Then pucker right. up, Clowny.
All right. No, it was Cram It Clowny. Cram It Clowny. It's an urban legend.
Yeah, it didn't really happen.
Pick a number, Bill.
Do them in order. Just start out with number one, and let's see who can get this Bozo trivia question right.
All right, this is Tony. Are you playing the giant seashells?
Tony, hi.
How you doing?
Tony, good luck. At stake is a gift certificate to Sweet Alley's Bakery.
It's
great
the
stuff.
Sweet Alley's Valentine's Day treat box. Gluten-free baked goods, but I'm giving you a secret. They don't taste gluten-free.
No, they
They're
don't.
Really good. So,
all right, Tony, good luck. Here's the question. On Bozo Circus, they would frequently show Bozo cartoons. On the cartoons, the Bozo cartoons, there were two villains that palled around together that had names that were similar to each other's. Who were those villains on Bozo Circus?
Oh.
Who knows this besides you?
I do. If no one gets it right, I get the Sweet Alley's, Wendy. That's how it works.
Was it Bill and Wendy?
It's not Bill and Wendy, Steve. Great try. Two villains on the Bozo Circus cartoon whose names were very similar to each other's. Who were they?
Boy, I have no idea.
Well, Tony, thanks for playing. Send us a gift certificate. It should work that way.
Thank you. All right, Carrie's on the line. Good luck, Carrie.
Carrie, same question. The two villains on the Bozo Circus cartoons who had similar names, who were they?
Didn't pop up on the screen yet?
No. I was actually calling in to tell you a Bozo story that my mom hated me for. Was it Butch? It was Butch and...
No, Butchy Boy was his young
yeah,
friend.
Yeah, Butchy Boy was his... No, I'm not
with.
Googling it.
Butchy Boy.
I remember Bozo singing, and this is real, Bozo's Pocket Rocket.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
But I was actually... So, no, I don't know the answer.
Oh,
so,
that's all right.
But I was calling to say that the only thing my mom was ever disappointed with me and my wife was we got Bozo tickets and we didn't have to wait 14 years and I slept through the whole thing.
Oh no.
How old were you?
I think I was 4 or 5. So it's acceptable, but she took to her grave with her every time. It's like, you slept through Bozo. But I do remember one part of it. We left and they usually didn't sign autographs at the time because they were wearing their clown stuff and Bozo had gloves on. But the reason we got tickets so quickly is because a relative in the family was in publishing and there was a book published and it involves WGN actually. It's called What Happens at a TV Station.
Yeah.
Oh.
And it was
Carrie, we're right in the middle of a contest, you know.
No, that's okay. But anyway, so I don't remember anything, but I still to this day have a book with Bozo, Cookie, and Oliver O. Oliver's signatures.
Oh,
so,
very nice.
Sorry, I don't know the answer. But
that's all right. Well, thanks for playing.
Thanks for
Take care.
Sharing.
He slept right through Bozo Circus, Wendy.
I slept through a story.
Oh.
Hi, Spike.
You guys are making me laugh. I forgot.
We don't mean to.
Morticia and Morticia?
We do not.
Who was the...
What was your guess?
I thought it was that might be from the Rocky Bullwinkle show, Morticia. Or
Morticia was on the Addams Family. You're thinking of Boris and Natasha,
but it was I know that.
It was not Boris and Natasha or
final answer, Spike.
Final answer, none.
Oh, all right.
All right, Nancy, Bill has asked the impossible question once again.
Tough question, Nancy. On Bozo Circus, on the cartoons, they had two villains whose names were very similar to each other. They palled around together. Who are they?
I had the same thing, the Boris and Natasha.
Oh, no. That's from Rocky and Bullwinkle. Thanks anyway,
right.
Nancy.
Thanks, Nancy.
Or as I call her, Nancy.
That's my nickname
for her.
I like your time release comedy.
Yeah.
I really enjoy that.
Yep.
Al, please save this contest.
Al, do you know the answer? The two villains on Bozo Circus, on the cartoons on Bozo Circus, had similar names. Who were the two villains?
Of course I know it. It's Big Shorty and Short Biggie.
Yes. I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you.
Al.
I love you the way that Wendy's mother never loved her.
God, will you stop it?
I can't help it.
Al, Al, congratulations. Hang on a minute. Set Al up with Sweet Alley's Valentine's Day Treat Box. This is super yummy. Featuring Sweet Alley's sweet and savory gluten-free baked goods, Sweet Alley's Bakeries, located in Hinsdale and Glenview. You can go to sweetalis.com to learn more. And we have more of these packages
we
to give away
for the rest of the week. Do you remember Short Biggie and Big Shorty?
Yeah.
They were great.
That's the dumbest names in all of cartoon characters.
I think
characters.
They were just nicknames. Not their actual names.
Oh, all right.
All right. A little break, and then it's Tech Tuesday. We'll talk to Bridget Carey next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. That music means we're talking to Bridget Carey, CNET Senior Editor. It is a Tech Tuesday. And, Bridget, where shall we start?
How about for those of you who are hungry for love?
Oh.
Yeah, very romantic. Wow. Very romantic, Bridget. Go ahead.
Well, there's many ways to find love online. You know, there's Tinder and all these apps. But what about an app that just helps you find your soulmate based on a picture of the inside of their refrigerator?
Oh.
That is a great idea. Because
yep.
People who eat healthy usually want to hang with people who eat healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Samsung. This is a product of Samsung, actually.
Samsung has a dating app?
Yes, they have a dating app just for taking pictures of the inside of your fridge. So a little background here. Samsung has these smart fridges where this is a couple years ago they came out with them, where if you're at the grocery store and you're thinking, oh, do I have milk? Do I have carrots? You know, you can at least pull up your app and get a live cam view of the inside of your fridge to remind yourself. Well, clearly that team that created that is bored and made something to use that camera in a new way, and now made a way so, like, you could scan the inside of people's fridges and swipe left or swipe right if you're into maybe learning more about them. Like, oh, you know, this person has all organic things. Now they're my kind of person. Or maybe they have, like, an open can of cat food, and you're like, nope. So you don't have to have this smart fridge to do it. You could just use your phone, take a photo of your the goods you got, and participate. Samsung's not saying how many people use it, but it is real.
Right.
Yeah, it is real. We have a video how it works, and a reporter tested it out. So that's where we are today in the world of online matchmaking.
Bridget, I'm curious, is there also a picture of the person whose refrigerator it is, or is it strictly the refrigerator?
Strictly the refrigerator.
Oh, interesting.
So if you have some, like, pet peeve about putting honey in the fridge or something, and you're like, I'll never get along with this person, at least you'll know right away.
Will people still do what they do with regular dating apps and show a picture of the inside of the refrigerator from 10 years ago to make themselves look better for some reason?
Yeah, that's not a bad idea there.
Yeah. Right.
Did you ever live alone, Bill? Have an apartment? You've never lived
alone. I've never lived alone. No.
Look at Mr. Independence.
I don't think I could handle that.
There are guys who live alone, and I've seen their fridges are just
ketchup.
But beer and, like, Domino's boxes, you know, from pizza that was, like, from last night. You know, that's all they got, or ketchup.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you have condiments, but where's the actual food?
That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah.
Maybe some ladies would find, like, oh, he needs me. He needs me to help him. Maybe you never know. It's not all judgment. It could be a cry for companionship.
It is a cry for companionship. All right, that's great.
All right, now what are we in the phone business? We're at 4G. Are we at 5G yet? And what happens if we see 5GE in the corner of our phones?
Oh, this is the latest thing that AT&T is confusing folks. Okay, is there 5G? Really, the answer is no. Most places are going to get it in 2020. Some rollout has started now. And what AT&T has done is, you know, in the corner of your phone where it says if you have a 3G or 4G connection?
Yes.
They started sending out the signal to people's iPhones and some Android phones saying, you're in a 5GE network, and that makes you think you have 5G speeds. First off, no phone out there can even handle, like, can't even read or do anything with 5G. So, no, there is no 5G phone even that could use it. And the E is like evolution. AT&T goes, oh, we're just letting you know you're in an evolution area. So you're misleading. Like, what are you doing? So if you see 5GE in the corner of your phone, relax, you're not getting faster speeds, your iPhone doesn't have a new capability, it is still probably just 4G, and that they're coming soon with 5G. Personally, I think it's kind of an awful practice.
It's misleading.
You're more and more in commercials. Yeah, you're going to see it more and more in commercials. You're going to see the word 5G everywhere. You're going to everyone's talking about how they're upgrading their networks.
Yeah.
And so this is going to be a sales pitch for the next 2 years. And of course, it's about, well, who's going to have a phone that has 5G? Well, we don't have it in the U.S. yet, so just wait and see. I think the iPhone will probably be one of the last phones to get it. You know, Android tends to try to jump on a trend first, even if it's not ready, and Apple tends to wait it out before the networks are really tried and tested before they say, yes, we're investing in having a phone that can take those faster internet speeds.
This irks me. I mean, if they can come up with their own personalized message, like they have it where it says 5GE, they're obviously entering that manually. What if somebody hacks that and put, like, you know, Trump rocks or Trump rules or boo Trump? I mean, this is just one more hackable thing.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny how much that they can just, like, send out a message and have it be seen.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, you just put a new number on it, but it's not really a new number. I think this is a consumer issue of you know, questionable, you know, marketing practices. So I don't know where this is going, but just know that it's not actually 5G. If you
Bridget, we only have time for one more story. Let's do that one about the new Messenger feature.
Oh, yeah. You can now, if you are on Facebook, send in messages to folks. You can now take it back. A while ago, it was revealed that Mr. Zuckerberg himself was the only one with the power to remove a message once it was sent to someone in a private chat.
Mm-hmm.
And he got criticized, and now they're like, oh, we made it available for everyone. One thing is you have 10 minutes to take a message back. So after it's sent, if you're in a group chat or just a one-on-one chat with someone and you regret that message, you can still delete it, but you have 10 minutes to do so.
And that doesn't prevent someone who looked at it like 1 minute after you sent it, and someone could have screenshotted it by then, correct?
Someone could have screenshotted it. They can still report it if it was like a really nasty message, you know. So yes, it doesn't make it like, you know, erased from anyone's memory or existence that they saw it. But at least you can somewhat take something back if you didn't like what was said.
Well, that is good to know. What else are you working on over at CNET?
Well, this has been an interesting couple of weeks because we got this big toy fair coming up in New York.
Yes.
And so
are you going,
in the next
Bill?
2 weeks.
I've never been, but Bridget goes every year, and I get jealous. I want to go. It's at the Javits Center, right?
Yep, and when that comes, I'll definitely keep you updated. But right now, planning a lot around that, so I'll keep you posted when that happens.
Perfect. We will find you at CNET.com, also on Instagram, at Bridget Happens, and Twitter, at Bridget Carey. Tech Tuesday. Thanks once again, Bridget.
Thanks. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Bridget. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. We're easy to reach at 312-981-7200. That's our phone number and our text number. And we're anxious to hear what you think about this. Are you following the Liam Neeson story at all, Wendy?
I didn't hear anything about it till this morning. I guess that's when it broke. It's pretty interesting, to say the least.
Very strange, peculiar story. Liam Neeson is doing a press tour right now. He has a new movie that opens on Friday called Cold Pursuit. It's getting pretty good reviews. Our own Dean Richards has said some very good things about this movie, Cold Pursuit. So in an interview he did, a print interview, he talked about an incident that happened to him earlier in his life, by which a friend was raped, and she was handling the rape as best she could and giving away some details about what happened. And he found out, he asked her the color of the person who had raped her. She said that it was a black man. And the way he handled it is getting a lot of publicity, because he said that it put him in such a fit of rage that he went out on the streets to find a black person to either beat up or kill. He was so furious at what happened to her that his way of handling it was to do that. A lot of questions are coming up because of this. Most notably,
he's not a racist.
He's saying he's not a racist, that this was an isolated time in his life that he felt this way. He's not the same person now. A storyline that we've heard many times.
This was 40 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. But the one question that keeps coming up over and over and over again is, let's say he felt this way, and we have no reason to believe that he didn't feel this way. What are you getting out of sharing this? Why wouldn't you keep this suppressed? Why wouldn't you keep this back?
That is the million-dollar question, Bill.
I think this is 100% speculation. All this is a guess. I think he was just trying to be honest and say, look at how different I am now than I was then. I wasn't well educated. I wasn't thinking clearly. And it's a defense that I guess anyone in any of these stories, I mean, we told a story yesterday about a politician who did something in his 20s and is a much older man now. And several texters said, but you're not the same person when you're in your 20s as you are when you're in your 50s. I understand that. I get that. But I think he felt as if he was opening up and saying something, a very, very dark moment from his past, and saying, but look at what a different person I am now. I wouldn't do something like that today. But as a younger guy, I fell prey to that.
As someone who offers way too much information, you're looking at her, you know this to be true.
Yeah.
You wouldn't say something like that to get your point across now. You just wouldn't. There's no way. His exact thing was, I had never felt this feeling before, which was a primal urge to lash out. This is what he said on Good Morning America. This is how he felt after learning of his friend's assault by allegedly a black man. After that, there were some nights I went out deliberately into black areas in the city looking to be set upon so that I can unleash physical violence. And I did it for, I'd say, maybe 4 or 5 times until I caught myself. And it really shocked me, this primal urge I had. It shocked me, it hurt me, and I did seek help. He turned to a priest, 2 good friends, and power walking to work through his issues, and went on to say, I'm not a racist. This was nearly 40 years ago.
I have so many mixed emotions about that.
I know.
I'm not going to say that I applaud him, but I understand the need to open up and say, I had a dark period in my life. Let's discuss it. I'm not the same person. I'm rehabilitated. I'm nowhere near like that anymore. But by the same token, I wonder if he had a chance to do it again, if he wouldn't rethink it and say, yeah, that happened to me, but it's not something I'm comfortable with talking about. But he doesn't seem to, he's not taking that stance.
Is it different if the friend was raped by a white person and he went out and just said, I was so angered by the attack that I just wanted to punch anyone?
Well, here's another quote from him that kind of deals with exactly that. Liam Neeson says, if she had said an Irish or a Scot or a Brit or a Lithuanian, I know I would have felt the same effect. I was trying to show honor, stand up for my dear friend in this terrible medieval fashion. I can't figure out if that makes it better, worse, or exactly the same. He's saying it really, I think what he's saying is that it doesn't so much matter that it was a black person. I just had so much rage in me for whoever did this that I wanted to find somebody like them and have some payback.
Okay, but why didn't he leave the color out of it?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer.
Because
to
just
that.
To say, you know, my friend was harmed, she was raped, I have this primal urge, which actually scared me because I just wanted to go out and take someone down.
Right. Right.
I mean, that would people still be on his back on that one?
I don't know why.
He didn't act on it. Yes, he walked around, but nothing ever became of it.
Right. How lucky.
And he started power walking. To get himself
well, that's good. There's always some good news in any story, and there's the good news is he has discovered power walking.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
I riddle you this.
Yes.
Is this going to affect the proceeds of the Cold Pursuit?
I don't know for sure, but I do know this. If you're the producer of this movie and you hear this, you just do that thing where you take your hand and you cover your eyes with it and you move your hand up and down your face like, Liam.
Why?
That's quite a story, but some things are better left in the attic. What are you doing? There's no reason for this. I'm sure that as he was divulging this story, he thought to himself, well, this is a dark part of my past, but, here it is. Here's what I experienced at some point. He, when telling the story originally, that was the moment that it took a weird turn where he wanted to know the color of the person. Because you go, this woman has just been assaulted. That's bad enough. I don't know what you're going to get out of knowing.
That wouldn't be my
why would you? Yeah, that
question.
Wouldn't be the question.
Oh, my God. Do you know who did it?
Right. Are you okay? You know,
well, that would be the absolute first
That would
first
be the first
one.
Question. But
in an interview, he was asked what his motivation was for his revenge movie. So that's maybe why he brought this up.
That's what led to this.
Yeah. Also, someone saying at 847 texting in, it's a form of penance.
Is it?
He wants to confess. Somebody else has an interesting thought. Makes you wonder if Liam is trying to get ahead of something that's about to come out.
Oh, I hope not.
That's an interesting take on it.
I hope that's not the case. I like him a lot.
No problem with his honesty, said someone. Someone else. I don't understand why people are blowing this out of proportion. He did nothing wrong. He did nothing wrong.
He didn't do anything wrong.
His
he
thoughts,
thought something wrong.
Yeah, but how? Come on. We've all thought something wrong. Not necessarily racist wrong, but we've all, you know.
Right.
Something wrong.
Yeah, I guess so. So how deeply do you punish somebody for thinking something and not acting on that something? Right. I keep wanting to say you want to give him credit, but I'm having a hard time giving him credit. You know, I guess if you're giving credit just for being honest. Yeah, he was really honest in saying this.
And he did nothing.
And he did.
He didn't
nothing.
Act on it. I mean, he walked around looking for trouble, but he didn't. And also, just to clarify again, the rest of the story, I believe Liam said the reason it was brought up in the interview, he was asked, what did he draw upon to play this vengeful character in this Cold Pursuit?
Right.
This would have been years ago. So what did you draw upon? But it was some kind of inspiration. We all have a dark side, says 219, but most people don't want to admit it. We have to embrace our dark side and get to know to control it. The dark side.
There, in the first story version that I read of this, he's sitting next to, there's an actor named Tom Bateman, who is one of his co-stars in this movie, Cold Pursuit. And then he just kind of tells this story, Liam Neeson does. And then Tom Bateman is just listening to the story, which he had obviously never heard before. And then he just goes, holy, and then the S word, as if to say, what are you doing? That's quite a story, but what are you doing? We're trying to sell a movie. I'm not positive that's going to sell tickets to our movie. What are you doing? So, again, if you're scoring Liam Neeson on honesty,
he gets an A.
He's being very honest, but if you're scoring him, I get it. Everybody has these moments, but then you also have to have some sort of a filter where you go,
maybe I shouldn't make this public.
Yeah. Is this going to help anybody in me saying this? Did it help anybody?
No,
it
but
makes
again,
him more, I guess it, you could say, well, it makes him more real. But
you understand the rage he would feel. I just feel he should have left the race out of it.
I understand the rage 100%. I understand all the rage, but I wouldn't. I would try to channel that rage toward the single person who did it, and not the race of the person who did it. You know?
Exactly.
That makes sense.
That was the perfect way to phrase it.
Yeah. Help in any way, shape, or form. The authorities figure out who it is and channel the rage toward that person if you need to. But not say what's
not
the ethnic background of that person.
Agreed.
Well, then I'm going to do something to harm the ethnic background of that person. That's not going to work, I don't think.
Eloquently said.
Oh, thank you. I knew eventually something eloquent would come out of my mouth. All right, we'll take a quick break. What are your thoughts on this, on Liam Neeson admitting this dark moment from his past? We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about actor Liam Neeson, who admitted to, I guess what you'd call a dark moment in his past, where he was talking about how a friend of his had been sexually assaulted. He needed to know the race of the person, and then he went out in hopes of finding somebody who was black and doing some bodily harm to them. Happened years and years ago, 40 years ago.
All right. This is Carol on the line. Carol, how are you?
Hi there. I'm well, thank you. I'm just wondering whether or not, given how many public figures have been outed in the past several years for being racist or homophobic in their youth, I'm wondering whether Neeson, maybe not even consciously, was outing himself.
As if to say he still holds some sort of racism in him, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that if this had been all of these other public figures, because of, you know, technology and the interweb, et cetera, you know, people go in and dig and they find these moments in these public figures' past that, you know, show them in their 20s or late teens as being racist or homophobic. And so even unconsciously, I'm wondering if Neeson was just getting it out there just so he could out himself and be done with it.
Like getting it off his chest.
No, not getting it off his chest so much as thinking that someone would go public with
it. Oh, so he's getting ahead of it.
Exactly.
All right, Carol, that is
a
great theory.
Although,
thank you for the call.
These were just internal thoughts, so I don't know who could come forward and say, hey, I know some things that Liam Neeson was thinking
40
years ago.
No, he did it in a print. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, he couldn't beat anybody to the punch. Nobody else would know his internal thoughts but himself.
But he said it in an interview 40 years ago, so it would ultimately come out.
He said it in an interview recently. It took place 40 years ago.
No. According to this story, and I could be wrong, Bill, but it was speaking, he found himself in about 40 years ago, he opened up to Britain's The Independent about this. So he revealed it 40 years ago.
Oh, I was getting that it just happened, but the incident took place 40 years ago, but he was just revealing it now.
No, it's he addressed an alarming interview in which he admitted to seeking to kill a black person. He spoke to Robin Roberts.
Why were they interviewing him 40 years ago? He wasn't famous then.
He opened up to Britain's The Independent. I don't know. You'd have to ask him, but he was interviewed, and that's when it was when he said that.
Okay.
And so he was on Good Morning America to say, you know, that's what he said. I brought this up, and I want to make it right.
All right.
Robert?
Hi, how you doing, guys?
We're good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. I think that I hate the idea how people always try to water down the idea that, or they find it so far-fetched that somebody can be racist. I mean, it happens. It exists. Why is it so far-fetched? There's people that, to this day, that are racist. I think he said it at that time with the passion that he said it. Maybe he's not as racial as maybe other people may think, but I think he has some sensibility in there because asking that question in a moment that's so tragic, like that was far more important than anything else was the color of his skin.
Agreed.
And his rage was towards the fact that he just so wanted, you know, that color of that skin to approach him in some type of negative way to kind of give him the satisfaction that he was able to experience that thing. And I don't know, people need to stop watering down his feet just because of his status. He's an actor. So what? He's a racist. That's it. It's just bottom line.
Robert,
do you
buy the he followed it up by saying if she, that's his friend we're referring to, if she had said an Irish or a Scot or a Brit or a Lithuanian, I know I would have felt the same effect. Do you believe that part of it or not?
No, I don't think so. Because again, his more important question to it all was,
what race is he? I know that kind of surprises me.
Well, why? That's the least. That would be the very least thing I think any human that has the sensibility of seeing somebody experiencing something so tragic as that their question is going to be, what color was his skin? Like, what color was he?
Yeah.
It's first you ask the questions: are you okay? Are you, you know, what is your what is the description? I tell you what, I'm gonna leave this in your hands. What is the description? What did he look like? What was he wearing? You know, so on and so forth.
Have you been to the cops? Have you been to a hospital? What have you done? Yes, those
absolutely.
Are the questions.
Yeah,
that would
those
flow.
Are far more important questions to be asked.
Right.
Okay, but
tragedy like that, then
Robert, what if he, you know, if he said, "What did he look like?" and she said, "He was a black man, about 6'2".
But you're leaving it at to her discretion to give that description.
It, right. He didn't wanted, come right out and
it
say
it was more important to him to know the color than it was for her to like freely give him this description because of something tragic that happened to her.
All good points, you know, Robert. And, yeah, I agree.
Yes, and it exists. It exists. I'm Puerto Rican, and I had a grandfather who was racist against his own grandkids because they were dark, and he was white. But, wow. You know, it exists. This stuff happens, and people always try to feel and water down people's actions because it happened so many years ago. So what if it happened so many years ago? It happened. The fact that it mattered that it happened.
Yep.
That's what it's valued at.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your call, Robert. We totally appreciate it. And the independent interview, which took place 40 years ago, was published online Monday. So this is why he's discussing it. It was released from 40 years ago on Monday. So he is saying here, you know.
I just don't know why they would have interviewed him at all 40 years ago, because he wasn't famous 40 years ago. That's really strange.
Well, according to MSN, 40 years ago, he opened up to Britain's The Independent about this particular incident.
Right.
He wasn't an actor 40 years ago?
He might have been an actor, but he wasn't famous 40 years ago. I mean, nobody. He
Frasier,
been
you're
in any,
not famous anymore.
He wouldn't have been in any movies or anything. I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know either.
All right. We'll take a break. Get you some news, and then there's more show. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And thank you, Eric Rung. I want to clarify something because I read this incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
Liam Neeson was speaking with Robin Roberts on Good Morning America. And he was talking about an incident that happened 40 years ago. He opened up to Britain's The Independent about this incident recently.
Yeah.
And he's getting backlash about it, and that's why he appeared on Good Morning America. So the article originally was not 40 years ago, as you questioned, because he wasn't famous.
He wasn't
then.
Famous. I don't know why they would have interviewed him back then.
So they didn't. This was an interview that he did with The Independent recently. The actual event took place 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And he went on Good Morning America to discuss the backlash from The Independent's interview.
And he's all over the place today. He's everywhere today because people are wondering what his motives were for the divulging of this story. It's very strange because it's that.
Is it have to do with the theme of the movie?
Well,
I know
I've not seen the movie from all indications and from every Liam Neeson movie I've ever seen, somebody in his family is kidnapped and he goes out to find them. Anytime there's a script like that in Hollywood, they go, don't even have a casting session. Just give it to Liam Neeson. He's good at finding family members who've been kidnapped.
And 630 said he talked about his life at that time during the Catholic Protestant War in Ireland and how the mindset was to identify in detail who was an attacker to exact revenge on that particular person.
All right. Here's something that will clean the palate just a little bit, Wendy.
Oh, it's a little radio sorbet. Thank you, Bill.
Some radio sorbet for you. Some intermezzo. I have found this on MSN. These are things that we, the public, do in restaurants that we think is good. We think these things are good, that we're helping. But as it turns out, the staff of the restaurants are not happy with you. See how many of these you are guilty of.
I bet many.
Have you in a restaurant setting seated yourself? You go in, you see that the host or hostess is busy.
No.
And you look around and you go, there's a couple open tables, they're busy, I'm just going to sit down there.
I have never done that unless it's not like a hostess place. It's like if it's a seat yourself place,
then you seat yourself.
And I even like stop for a minute because it's not right for me to just go sit anywhere. I wait for someone to say, oh, you can sit anywhere you want.
That's the key to this. If somebody gives you the authority to do that, then have at it. Pick a seat, go ahead, it's yours. But on my own, no. I won't do that because I know that they have, you know, little seating ideas of things they want to do, seat people in a certain station. I don't want to mess that up. So I've not done this, but they recommend over at MSN that you not do this.
I would never do that.
If the hostess or host is busy, just give them a minute. They'll come to your defense. They'll help you.
Or if not, you leave.
Yeah. Give them 30 seconds.
No.
I'm out of here.
You know, if you're waiting 20 minutes and no one comes to talk to you, I would pick another restaurant.
Then you do. Right. I will warn you in advance, this is one that I'm guilty of almost every time I'm in a restaurant. Stacking used plates.
I do that
table.
All the time, too.
Always do that.
And they don't want you. They want to do it in their own form and fashion.
Right.
But then be a little more attentive and get rid of them quicker.
Doesn't even have to do with being attentive. In my head, I'm making their job easier because you don't have to grab around and reach around and grab that one and put that one on top of that one. I've already stacked them for you.
Can I tell you
you're
why
welcome.
That you're not making it easier? And I only know from experience. When I host Thanksgiving every year, Jim is the one who does all the cleanup. And when people offer to help, we say no because they stack them. And then when you're putting the dishes in the dishwasher, you now have to rinse both sides of the plate.
No, I understand that. So that's so, in a restaurant, it would be even more so.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's more volume.
Right.
No, I understand.
How do they do it?
Volume. That's how they do it. Now, knowing that I know that this is wrong, if I went out to eat right now...
You'd still do it?
I would still do it. Because it seems like a good thing.
But if they stack them, that's their business.
Right.
I just...
What if I asked in advance and said, what is your... what stacking technique do you use here? Because I want to help you.
Here, we can rehearse this. Hi, my name is Gina. I'll be your
Gina.
Server today.
Hi. I'm a stacker, and when I'm done eating... I'm going to probably stack my and my friend's used plates. Is there a certain method? Because I want to make sure I get this right.
No, I'd actually appreciate the help, so go for it.
Oh, I'm going to do it then. Yeah.
Or she would say, you know, yeah, I'll get your dishes. Don't worry about it, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you. I don't want to share my tip with you.
I know it's part of the show. It's part of the game. It's part of it. And I don't have... This is something I want so badly.
Can't wait to hear this.
You know when you're in a nice restaurant and there's
you've
never been in a nice restaurant. So there's crumbs and things near your plate. I like when they pull out that thing that's like a safety razor and they move the crumbs over very neatly. I would like to have one of those.
I have one.
Where did you get one?
Lecter's.
I bet Lecter's would have them.
No,
I'm gonna ask Lecter's if they've got them because I
What's
want
Lecter's?
One.
Lecter's.
Lecter's is that place in the mall where they sell food items that I think Hannibal Lecter's father owns them. I think.
It's
Jerry
a
Lecter.
Crumb scraper, and you can get
look
it.
Look at you with the technical terminology. I wouldn't
sur la table.
Oh,
for
next,
$5.
Next time I'm in Milan, I'll get one.
No, sur la table is in like Old Orchard.
Oh, that's a real place.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was a place.
Sur la table.
Sur la table, I've been to.
Sur la table.
Never been in that
It's
one.
$5. You can get it on Amazon, a deluxe improved stainless steel crumb scraper with nickel-plated
nice
clip.
Oh,
$7.95.
I would like that.
Excuse me, but are you going to carry this on your person every time you go out?
I just, there's something about the art of that, watching a waiter or waitress who's really good at the scrape, that I just, you know, I physically applaud them. I just go, that's fantastic.
It doesn't work as well on a paper tablecloth. It has
not.
To be a cloth tablecloth.
Right. Or a picnic table, it doesn't work on. You got to be in a nice restaurant.
The Crummer tool, restaurant-grade quality stainless steel Crummer blade, perfect for restaurant waiters, waitresses, servers,
and me.
Customer Bill.
I would like to have one of those Crummers.
This is a kind of a newfangled one.
What
it's
is
new
it
and improved. This one's $13.95.
Money's no object. For this, to have a good crummer, I
wouldn't
wish
your birthday was coming up.
I would love one for my birthday.
All right.
Now, keep in mind, Wendy, I'm ambidextrous, so please get me one that I can use either left-handed or right-handed.
You can.
All right. Just want to make sure. Even if it's a couple extra bucks, it's worth it.
That's a weird one. I used to bus tables as a side gig, and I loved it when people stacked their plates. It was just grab and go onto the next table.
Don't you think?
It just depends on the place.
It's just, but it's...
At a nice restaurant, no.
Oh. Saturday night, my wife and I and two friends went out, and I did this, and it streamlined the process. I even got a look from the server as if to say, you don't know what kind of day this has been, sir. What you have just done... I thought they were going to cry. They were like, oh, thank you so much.
Well, keep doing it.
I'm going to keep doing it.
What is this survey from?
MSN. These are all things that they don't want you to do in restaurants that you think are okay, but they don't want you to. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then more of this. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to call, if you have a crummer to send, gently used.
No, you want a fresh one.
I
want
to get a new one?
Yeah, don't use food items that are used.
Yeah, that's solid. That's true. All right.
Solid?
What?
Yeah,
jeez. That's what we say now.
That's solid.
That's what Big Boy and I say.
Except your Big Boy is the guy holding the burgers.
Yeah, that's
and
what I meant.
And he has a crummer in his upper pocket.
Who did you think I meant? That's Big Boy.
That's your Big Boy. All right, you're telling us what not to do at a restaurant?
Wendy, these are things you would think would help everybody would be happy if you did these things in restaurants, but the staffs of restaurants have spoken and said, no, do not do these things. We're not happy.
All right. One involved you stacking plates, and yeah. Raymond wants to comment on that. Hey, Raymond.
Hi. I was going to say, I think it makes a difference if you take, like when I stack plates at the restaurant, I take all the stuff off the plates and then stack them.
Yeah.
And put like all the napkins and stuff on one plate. But
yeah.
I also know some people just kind of stack it with all the stuff between it. And then that, I think, would be more of an inconvenience.
It messes up the rhythm because you got silverware in there and napkins in there. Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
So you need to scrape them if you're going to stack them, Bill.
Yep. That's true.
Yep.
Scrape them if you got them.
Yeah, that's what they say.
Thanks, Raymond.
Thanks, Raymond.
And something about your crumb brush.
Crummer?
What did I don't know what I called
you
it.
You said crummer, you said?
It is called, the crummer. Susan, help me on this one. What's it called?
Well, the one that I have is made by Fuller Brush.
Oh, and that's an old one.
Out in this, and it's really cool. It's like a 3x5,
uh-huh.
And there's a little brush with the bristles on it inside this little enclosed plastic thing. And as you scoot it over the table, it brushes like a vacuum cleaner with a beater bar.
Yes, I have that same one.
Right into the container.
So it's not just like, it doesn't look like a curved butter knife. It is a little brush. I have that same one, Susan.
How much do you want for it, Susan?
Well,
name your price.
My parents had a German restaurant, so all the waitresses had one in their little aprons.
Yeah.
So when they were done, they would just scoot across the table, or when the guests finished eating their bread, they would just, right in front of them, just roll it quickly, and voila.
Auf Wiedersehen.
It's all gone.
Yep. Beautiful. Well, Susan, how much do you want for it? Name your price.
Do you know what? I'll just send it to you.
No. You couldn't do that.
I found one. No, I found one on, although mine is brown.
Mine's blue.
All right, this is a white one, Bill. And I found it. It's like $6.47.
Oh, that's.
I'll order it for him. Don't send yours, Susan. You're going to need it the minute you send it away.
No, I still use it, and my kids all the time. And my kids are adults now. And when they come over, they always make sure that they make a mess just to watch that little thing come out.
Thanks so much,
Susan.
Thank
you, guys.
Take care. Appreciate it.
Bye.
All right, look. Fox Run 3190 Plastic Table Crumb Sweeper.
Mm-hmm.
It's $6.47.
That's all?
It's plastic. Here, you can look at it.
What's the high end? Like, what if I wanted a really, really nice one? What would that run me?
All right, first of all, you will never have it with you. This will be for home use. You're not going to carry this in your pockets.
I would carry it with me. There's a restaurant downtown that I've eaten at, and the waiters have them, and they're almost like Swiss Army knives because they have different things. You've seen that, right?
Yes.
One part of it is like a razor blade. One part of it is like a brush.
They could give you a shave while you're waiting.
I've asked. I said, could you just take a little off the top? I don't know why they wouldn't do that.
OXO, which is one of my favorite gadget companies, they make a Good Grips crumb sweeper, and it's more streamlined, but this one's $14.49.
I don't care.
See it? The little brush?
Oh, that's a beautiful one.
OXO.
I'd be proud to have that.
I'll get you one, but where are you going to
use it?
I'll
use it all the time. I'll use it wherever I go.
Bill's going to go to a nice restaurant, and you know how a lot of people take like their keys out of their pocket and their phone? He'll take his crumb brush.
Right. As the waiter comes toward me, I go, Hans, I've got this. Let me get this. You rest.
You're a weirdo.
This is on me.
Is there another one we should know?
It's the OXO 3000. It says here, you should not push your plate away from you when you're finished eating.
I always do that.
I always do that, too.
Why?
It says it makes it harder for the staff to reach the plate, and it clutters up the table for your companions. The table's big enough, isn't it? If you're in a restaurant with a small proximity, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But if it's a big table, like when I eat at the Richard's Fair or something like that.
King
Richard's Fair. No, just Richard.
You get a discount?
He's a neighbor of mine.
I am not a booth lover. I hate booths.
Because of the theory that bugs congregate in them? Is that why?
That's in the back of my mind. But
that's my dad's theory. If my dad's with us, we never eat in a booth because he says that there's bugs in the cushions.
I will eat with your dad then because I just don't like booths because, when you're sitting.
I use my crummer to kill the bugs. That's one of the attachments on my crummer. It's a little
bugger.
Yeah, it's a bugger. I just stab it with it.
when you're sitting at a table, because there's four of us, and yeah. if so, who's going to slide in? I don't want to. I have bad knees. I really
can't slide in.
I don't want
the
to.
Kids, your kids should slide in.
Well, they like to sit together.
Oh.
So, and plus, you have to like excuse yourself if you need to get up or something. So, a table, you can control your own chair. Yes. I feel like I'm in prison when I'm at a booth.
Oh, it's that bad?
Yeah, kind of.
You are kind of locked in.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah.
I mean, we had this kitchen table, and one of the benches was against the wall, and that's where we ate dinner, and I would have to ask to be excused. And if they said no, then I would just crawl under the table.
Do that as an adult and see what happens.
There are too many bugs down there.
That's true.
We should continue. Are there more?
Yeah, there's a bunch
more.
Can
we continue on the stream?
We'll do it on the stream.
All right.
Maybe I'll call into Bertrand's show. I'll do the Wintrust business lunch, me and Glink.
Is Glink into
it? Yeah, Glink and I will do this on his show.
All right.
Or we'll do it on the... No, I'll do it on the stream.
All right.
Let's put it on the stream.
Well, we'll do that.
All right. Coming up, the stories that matter with Eric Rung from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.